welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. Australian Julian Rickett is a founder member of internationally acclaimed theatre group One Step at a Time Like This. He was a late starter in theatre, only going to college in his 30s, where he met future partner and co-producer Suzanne Kirsten. En Route was a site-responsive, immersive theatre production first created in the laneways of Melbourne that took the theatre company around the globe, including a visit to London as part of the Cultural Olympiad in 2012. Taking to the streets, they've created performances for audiences of one at a time, in which you as the audience member engage both imaginatively and directly with the city, passers-by, narrative, and your own place within these. They've devised cinematic experiences on foot using audio and performances that include overlaying an adaptation of Shakespeare's Measure for Measure on Chicago and Nashville, in which they use a technique they call follow film.
No one in my family has ever seen a play, as far as I'm aware. And I grew up not knowing what they were. I played in bands all through my teens and 20s. And then when I was about 28, I thought, I'm starting to get old. And I started to develop an interest in plays. And I thought, I don't think I should be an old muso. That wouldn't be right. But if I was an old theatre person, that would be okay. I could keep doing that for as long as I wanted. And so around 28, I went, okay, I'm going to do this thing called theatre. So I adapted a script, I created a show, but I had never directed or acted or done anything before. It was a cast of 27, which I didn't know was a big number at the time, and I read a book on directing in the night, and then I tried it out in the day. The show was chaotic, but I thought, I can do this. And so then I went to university when I was 30 and did a more or less standard theatre degree where you do a bit of this and a bit of that. No great skill in anything in particular, but we had a sense of history that because we'd gone through the stages in a chronological way of theatre history, we sort of left that course thinking the next step in theatre history is me. And though it's amazingly sort of arrogant, it gave us a sort of freedom. We thought, we're empowered to do whatever comes next. And so I met up with Suzanne, my partner, and we created a theatre company.
So let's get a bit of chronology on here in sort of times and things like that. How long have you and Suzanne had a theatre company?
Well, our company, One Step at a Time Like This, has been going more or less since around about 2001. Originally, it was a large group of people, with people coming in and out according to their interests and their day jobs and things. And then at a certain point, we said, no, we want to do this entirely seriously, even though we're independent and have no money. So we said, who can synchronize their days so that we work on theatre Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and we work in a day job Thursday, Friday. Out of that group of people, there ended up being four of us, and that's how the company really started. It was the people who said, I will rearrange my life for theatre. And so that was around 2001.
When did you start to move out into the open air?
Around about 2005, I think it was, we were given a tile showroom, an empty tile showroom as a permanent space for us. And in that showroom, it had small little rooms. And so we started to create works that weren't us presenting to somebody, but we were suddenly very close to them. We were talking to them, and we realized we had to create another sort of performance style, which we worked on for a few years. And we started then to move sort of around the building. And then one day we sort of went off into the city for an experiment, and more or less we never went back to our space. We went back in 6 months to collect our things, but we found But the city was an amazing set, amazing cast. It was free, and nobody was in our way. And really, when we came to make En Route, which was 2009, one of the big impulses was that nothing could stop us. Didn't matter if we didn't get funding. It didn't matter if we didn't get a venue or costume or permissions. We did it just because we wanted to. And I think there was something about that sort of pure intention that helped the work to become what it was.
Okay, so you're now walking out and about.
Can I just say our intention was not to do a walking show. Concept was you sit in a cafe looking out of a window and you hear an audio story that is so particular and yet open that whoever passes by, you think, oh, that's their story. And that person is that person. And that person is that. And that's what I wanted it to be. But I wasn't good enough to write that show. And so what happened was that this end scene in the cafe became the final scene in En Route. And we started to say, well, how do you get to there? And then how do they get to there? And how do they get to there? And how do you prime them so that when they look out of the window, they are in exactly the right sort of mood or zone to appreciate what they're seeing? And so it became a walking work by accident in a certain sort of way. And in the end, the cafe scene was quite small.
And was En Route your first significant piece that you developed for being outside?
Yes, it was.
And was it based originally on one neighbourhood, or did you think, hey, we could make this work anywhere?
We were making it. It was highly site responsive to Melbourne. And when we did it in Melbourne, people said, oh, it's so Melbourne. It's so Melbourne, it won't work anywhere else. And we were going, well, you know, I think it might. And it won an award for them to pay our fees to go to the Adelaide Fringe. And Adelaide is a very different city from Melbourne. Melbourne has lots of nooks and bluestone cobbles and laneways. Adelaide is very straight and fairly regimented. And we thought, well, if we can make it work in Adelaide, it will work anywhere. And we did it in Adelaide, and it won the Fringe Award for the best theatre show. So we went, okay, we can do this.
And that took you by surprise?
Difficult question, in a way, or it opens up a lot of areas. We've always thought of ourselves as doing theatre, and what makes En Route sort of work is that it's framed as a show. It's not framed as a walk. It's framed as a show, and you go and you're sort of looking for the show. And in looking for the show, you start to make the show. There are no performers. There's no narrative. There are no characters. What there is, though, is poetry, a bit of Merleau-Ponty talking about seeing. The show is actually about seeing. It's an audio work that is about looking. It's not primarily about what you hear. In fact, people forget what they're hearing. They can't even remember what that was. What they remember is they had an amazing experience in this spot. And if you ask them, what were they listening to? I have no idea. It also has local music. So ambient, post-rock, electronica, underground, and always from the place that we're at. So when we made it in Melbourne, we used our friends' music. That was great. We did it in Adelaide, and suddenly that music didn't work. And yet we were saying, it was so great in Melbourne. Why isn't it working? And then we got underground bands from Adelaide, pre-existing music, and put it in, and then suddenly it was all working. It's like the light, the ground, the shape of the buildings are also affecting the people who write the songs. Mm-hmm. And so they're all interconnected. And so wherever we've gone in the world, we find underground, post-rock, cinematic, whatever you call the language, bands who have pre-existing songs, and we underlie it with that. And there's something about that. And then we match each area with the music. And so I might, for example, this path that we're on, I might walk it up and down 10 or 20 or however many times until I go, I think I know what sort of music this path is. And then I get some music and I try it out. And at first it was a lot of trial and error. And now I feel like I can guess it fairly quickly.
Basically, the participants are wearing headphones, they're listening to an audio track or tracks. Is it one person at a time or is it many people taking part?
So you get a text saying, meet us at such and such a place at such and such a time. You'll know who we are. We kit them up with a headset, one at a time. We use iPod because we're looking for ubiquitous technology that just about anyone can use. Theory, we're not doing cutting-edge technology because it can go wrong, and so often does. We are using simple technology that people can use because they're going to navigate. It's not like something that's preset outside of them. They get to the end of track one and they press track two. So we kit them up and we say, walk that way and play track one. And off they go. And as they go, they listen to a bit of music, a bit of somebody chatting about... It's like snippets of urban thoughts. It's like the inner thoughts that you might have as you walk through a city from three main sort of characters' perspectives, but no narrative. They just say, I walk up, you know, I stand in front of this lane. Every time I come here, I stand in front of this lane. What would happen if I just kept walking? Walk down the lane. And so it's directional and ambient at the same time.
Okay, now you had a lot of success with this. This traveled the world. And each time, did you always stick to like three characters on the audio?
Yes, there's like three perspectives. It's actually a better thing to say than three characters. Yeah, three perspectives. So there's a template, and then we record that, and then we nuance it for wherever we are. So we try to find out, do people in general love their city? You know, some people really don't. And if you say that you love your city, they'll go, no, we don't.
Yeah.
And other people absolutely adore their city. So we're always trying to get the nuance right for wherever we are. So we talk to a lot of people and then incorporate that.
Now, that was 5 or 6 years ago, so there's a lot of time in between, and I'm absolutely certain that once you've done this a few times, you too want to move on. So where have you moved on to? What's been happening in the intervening 6 years?
Well, we have stayed outside, though I must admit we're now thinking about, wouldn't it be amazing to do a show inside with, like, lots of people? We've created fairly recently a show called Since I Suppose, where we wanted to take some of the ideas from En Route into a further direction, and we developed something that we call follow films, where on your phone device, the character, so to speak, of the play is in front of you, walking in the same place that you are. So you're led by the character as they walk through space. So we developed a show around Shakespeare's Measure for Measure, because it's a city-based play. You follow behind the nun, Isabella, or Angelo, the new head of the city. You follow behind them, and they go to the places now that the characters went to in Shakespeare's time. So instead of going to the Duke's castle, you go to City Hall in Chicago, for example, where we've done it. You go inside the church when she goes to the church. In the brothel scenes in Measure for Measure, in Chicago, we went to an adult bookstore, gave people some money to go in. In Melbourne, where we did it, we gave some money for people to go down into a peep show. And so you're experiencing it. And so we're not telling the story of Measure for Measure. It's like the person is having the experiences that you would have if you were in Measure for Measure. And we don't have any Shakespeare scenes as such. We have snippets of words. But when you're following the nun, for example, you're hearing a modern-day nun talk about why she became a nun. So it's very contemporary in that sense, but it follows the pattern of Measure for Measure. And it's also got visuals, which we didn't have in Henri.
And what sort of duration? Is this the similar duration of no, measure for measure, or is this something a much shorter piece?
I think it's longer. It's about 2.5 hours it's running at the moment, one person at a time.
So Chicago Shakespeare Theatre took us to Chicago to do En Route. They liked it so much that they commissioned us to make a new work. And they said you can do anything you like. They didn't say you had to do Shakespeare. But we love Shakespeare. We love the language. The plot, but the language we love. And so we decided to create this show. We took it back to them. We've also done it in Melbourne. The day after tomorrow, we fly to Nashville to start laying the groundwork, finding the places, getting permissions, all that to do it next year.
And your preparation time is then you do work, 18 months in advance before you set the performance in action, or 12 months in advance?
We need at least one reconnaissance mission to make sure it'll work in the city. It may not. If the things are just too far apart, it will not work.
But you've written it... I'm just sorry, I'm being rather picky here, but, yes. But you've kind of written it before you go to the city, or you write it once you've got to the city?
It's exactly the same as En Route, in that there's a template. We know the content, but then we adapt it for wherever we are, and we might find, oh, there's a very long section between this and this, so we have to create like a new scene in between to make that happen.
Now, there's quite a progression here, because the next piece that you haven't mentioned yet, but it's very recent, is Forever Young, and this is yes. working with teenagers. Is that audio as well, or is that with the teenagers live? Or?
That's with teenagers live. The way that came about was somebody from Clonmel Junction Festival, so Clonmel is a small town in Tipperary in Ireland, they did En Route in Edinburgh in 2010. They invited us couple of years later to do a weekend workshop with some young people who were hanging around the festival in Clonmel. And we did, and we liked them. We went, oh, well, we'll come back the next year. And what we did the next year was we sort of taught them how to make an en route for their city. And that was sort of the end of our engagement with them. But we said, we really like these kids. They said, can we make a show with you? Our own show, not yours, our own. And we went, sure, if we can get over to Ireland and do it. So we came over again and we created this show with them, which is a journey through the streets, no audio, but you sort of chase some kids, you get interrogated by them, you do some more or less or close to illegal things with them, and it's all about trying to get in contact with your teenage self. So one of the key questions is, would your teenage self like the person that you've become? We were in Ireland, so it was suggested that we go to Edinburgh, so we're sort of close. And so we did, without any great expectations. But it was very well received, and we got some nice reviews.
What we had was we had Irish teenagers running around Edinburgh. That's great.
That's right. And we've just been talking to some people in London. That's why we're here. And also Cairo. I don't know how we're going to do a Cairo version, because apparently there's no public space. Right. So that will be an amazing adventure. So this show was only meant to be for these Irish teenagers. But now it looks like it's growing, and we'll keep following it to see what it where it leads.
So you'd mapped out a route?
Yes.
Okay. It wasn't for the participants to wander anywhere and then follow instruction that might, you know.
That's so right. Because everything is scripted precisely to the place. And we spend a lot of time in all of the shows just saying, how can you describe how to get from here to there so that just about anyone can do it successfully? And it's amazingly difficult.
Okay, so you have to think about the times that people might walk for or dawdle for.
Oh, absolutely. In En Route, for example, you're walking, you get to a certain point, your phone goes off and it says, turn down this alley and play track 4. At the end of track 4, it says something about, you know, what you do next. And so you're operating, but it's all highly prescribed. And if we get those descriptions exactly right, people forget that it's highly prescribed, because they're now actually free just to completely have the experience. I find that sort of interesting. The more tight it is, the less freedom they have. Usually, the more feeling of freedom that they actually have. They experience that they have a sense of freedom. And actually, it's highly
So, for yourselves, you haven't moved into looking at sort of tracking participants with GPS or having triggers which are geolocated, because you're saying you want to keep it failure-safe.
That's right. We have looked into it, and we've investigated beacon technology with Institute of Technology in Illinois. But it is exactly that question. If it goes wrong and you're not there, it's tricky. We did do a version for a hotel in Adelaide, just like a private hotel wanted to give their guests an experience. So we made one in Adelaide to stay there without us. And they did amazing things. Like, for example, the city council was on board, and you could get to the beginning of a street and we'd say, look around for your next instruction. And you see the street sign, and then above the street sign it says, play track 4. Yeah. It's embedded in the city. I'd love to see that everywhere. And so people who aren't doing the show have no idea what that means. People are go, wow, the city, even the city sign, is made for me.
Yeah.
And then people have this amazing sense of being special. And I think that's what we want. And I think that's why we were drawn to one-on-one works. I know when I went to the theatre, I always felt like it didn't matter whether I was there. You know, and so, yes, that's amazingly egocentric. But I feel that as the world gets more and more people, it's so easy to feel insignificant. And so shows that enhance your significance, your participation, I think it's bound to rise, because we're looking all the time for how can I be an individual in a place that more and more suppresses that or makes it difficult.
So now, where do you get your inspiration from, or has it just grown through working with a tight group of fellow professionals?
I don't know where we get our inspiration from, but it is a group of people who have worked together for 14 years or so. We have done everything together. We've seen our worst. We've been our worst with each other. We've failed ridiculously over and over again. And it means that we're actually relaxed when we're creating, because we're not worried about, oh, does that look silly? Or how do you think about me? Or maybe I'll get kicked out of the company if I'm not very good. We know all about our not very goodness. I think that ease is very important. It's one of the things we wanted. When Suzanne, very early on, she said, I want to create a 21-year project. And we all laughed, because that's absurd. But we're at the 14-year point, so we think, oh, we might be able to do a 21-year project. And there's something about that.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Julian Rickett. If you have any views on the interview or any walking issues, we'd love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.